Hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're a little echoey, but I can hear you. Your microphone is close enough to your face.
It's close enough to my face.
Yes.
Do you think I'm...
How are you...
You mean the room is echoey?
Yeah. That it doesn't come through when you're recording. It's just... it's fine. It's all good. Fear not. Tell me, how are you feeling? You've been poorly.
Yeah, again, I was sick. I was sick the week before I left Blighty. The week before I left Blighty, and then I was pushing pretty hard then because of bread basically. And I felt then the first week I was here, I was still sort of coughing, and then I've got better, and then I had about 4 days of feeling better, and then started getting itchy eyes and. I think I would blame pizza and gelato.
This is a podcast in which two friends talk about the pleasures, absurdities, and imperfections of being human. I'm Simon Ellis.
And I'm Lee Miller. Welcome to midlifing.
Actually, Lil and I went to a pizza place in Rome, a very, one of those places that everyone says, you've got to go to this pizza place.
Yes.
Like it's an institution.
Yeah. Yes.
And we went with a friend of hers and I forget the name of it, doesn't matter. And the pizza was classic Roman pizza. So I know people will be very interested in this, although very disappointed to say that no one got in touch with me asking for more information about dough hydration.
Oh my gosh, really? This is coming as a shock.
Yeah. I think you rang them all up, all seven listeners, and said, whatever you do,
don't ask about hydration.
Exactly. Anyway, so, you know, people will know the difference between, you know, the difference between a Roman and a Neapolitan pizza, don't you?
It's all to do with the base.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And,
That's it?
I thought you were going to ask me to explain the differences then.
But would you be able to tell one apart from the other, do you think?
I think probably no. I probably wouldn't. I want to say that the Neapolitan one would be less poofy at the edges, but I might have got them the wrong way around.
I think you've got them the wrong way around.
Yeah, there we go. Roman wouldn't be the... Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Exactly.
So no, I wouldn't tell them apart. I'd know they were different, but not tell them apart.
Yeah, so Roman ones are flat, basically, and they're a lot more crispy. And so if they've got big, fluffy edges and they're super soft, then those are Neapolitan ones. Anyway, this is a classic Roman pizza, and, you know, the pizza was fine and expensive. This is in the middle of Rome. Mm-hmm.
And it's a place to go.
In quite the queue, like a massive queue. So we queued for maybe half an hour, maybe an hour. No pizza for me is worth that kind of... went to pay by card. No, cash only.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how much cash is flowing through that place? I mean, the number of tables. And it just felt so dodgy. And then the guy knew exactly where to point me to the money machine, and then the money machine charged me €4 to get some cash out. So I felt like I was being diddled from every bloody side.
Yeah. Oh, goodness me. I was in a restaurant in Torino, which was similarly heaving and similarly a queue of half an hour's wait and similarly cash only.
How did you decide to go there?
It was a recommendation from a friend who used to live in Turin. And she said, oh, you should go there. It's the place to experience Turin food. You know, you'll get something which is emblematic and well-cut. She was absolutely right.
It was good food.
Yeah. It was good. It was good and it was inexpensive. So it wasn't, it was a good place. I felt very sorry for the restaurants around it because, actually maybe not sorry for them, but there was this incredibly big queue to get in. This was this is a place in a square, so there's maybe about another 10 or so restaurants on the square. And it was, yeah, like I said, it was a Thursday night we went, and there was a half an hour queue time. And I thought, nobody's queuing for the other ones. It's kind of sad.
Mm.
But I suppose they were getting the overspill of people who weren't prepared to queue for half an hour.
Yes, I suspect so. Actually, when I was in Naples, Napoli last year, we were, you know, there's a particular street which has a lot of delicatessens, and there was one delicatessen that, I mean, if you looked at them from the outside, you're thinking, every one of these is exactly the same. And there was one that had a queue that snaked around the corner. And the guy who was showing me around said, well, actually, there's a guy who used to work at a different deli, and he started doing this TikTok thing. And I can't remember that. It was a very particular sort of catchy phrase about some of the things he was doing in the deli. And the people who owned the deli that he was doing them really didn't like him doing this, so they kicked him out. And so there's other people sort of saw an opportunity, and they named a deli after this particular TikTok thing. And so it was basically TikTokers from all over the world coming to this deli to see this.
Oh, I bet deli number one was cross.
I suspect deli number one couldn't give a flying, you know. I don't know. But it was very strange.
Yeah. Queuing for food is an interesting thing, isn't it? You know, finding yourself, is it worth the hype? And the pizza wasn't worth the hype for you.
No, I don't. I really like pizza. You know, I like pizza.
The thing about pizza is it's good food. I mean, even disappointing pizza is still good.
It's also
what's not to love about bread and cheese?
Cheap and street. You know, it's street food. It should be cheap.
It should be, yeah.
And
yeah.
So the idea for me of, I could never go to that place that Julia Roberts went to in that film.
Mystic Pizza?
Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, right. I'm so sorry, I was just going back in time. You couldn't go to Mystic Pizza. I think that was a pretend place where she worked in the film, but okay.
I think it's called Michaela's or something like that. It's a very famous pizzeria in Napoli. There's no way I would ever go there just because it's so much about that. So, yeah, I don't think it's ever worth queuing for. Ever.
Now, when we went to Lisbon together, I didn't take, well, because for many reasons, I was not really the best host, but I didn't take you to Pastéis de Belém, which is where the Pastéis de Nata, or pastel, singular, the pastel de Nata was invented. We had some pastel de Nata, didn't we? We ate some custard tarts.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did.
I know we did. But what we didn't do is we didn't go over to Belém, which is about 12 kilometres outside of, maybe not that far actually, maybe it's more like 6 kilometres. Yeah,
no, I suspect you'd be worried that you would have come back to a flood in your flat if you'd left it that long.
Exactly. Flat update. Just every time I talk about the flat, I have to say, it's so dry. The walls are so white.
What do you like about your flat? It's dry.
It's dry?
It's quite a low bar, Lee Miller.
I know, but after a year of wetness, I find myself...
stroking the walls.
Upon all of... Well, no, I was... I mean, there's that for sure, but I find myself reflecting upon all those people who are displaced because of floods around the world, whether catastrophic, as in, you know, houses are ruined and destroyed and massive losses of life, or when there's the floods like there were in Carlisle or up in the north, or Boscastle down in Cornwall, where houses are just so incredibly saturated that it takes months and months and months and months and months for things to dry out. I find myself understanding that the pervasiveness of water when I see the things reflected on news in a completely different way now. It just gets in. Oh, it's just awful.
It also wins
for them in such
it?
A way.
It wins
yeah,
every
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. And to be very clear, we had a leaky roof. I mean, a catastrophically leaky roof. There was no roof on it, and then there was climate change rain. It was bad. But it was coming it wasn't coming up from the bottom as well.
It was also your fifth flat or your fifth house as well.
Shut up. It's only my second. So yeah, that's absolutely true. I didn't. It was disappointing, upsetting, and inconvenient. It wasn't life ruining.
Sure.
But we didn't go to Pastéis de Belém, and I think I would have liked to make you queue there.
Mm.
Although I suspect in November you wouldn't have to queue, but I think you probably wouldn't have to queue. But in high summer, there is an incredibly long queue to get these Pastéis de Nata.
And do you think? Oh, go on, please.
I was going to say, and remember that these are pastries that you can buy in literally every cafe across the city.
Yes. And you've queued there, obviously.
I have, more than once.
Is that when you're showing people there? Like, other people who you cared enough about to queue with?
Actually, I don't think I've ever taken anybody there. I don't think I've ever queued with anybody. I've only ever queued for Bob.
Ah, and are they... So what is that? What is that? I mean, what is that about? Is it just about the sort of idea of authenticity?
No.
Because would you really be able to tell the difference? Double blind? That you would really be able to tell the difference?
Yeah. Honestly, they are. I mean, they're pretty good around the entire city, unsurprisingly. But there are probably three or four places where they are massively elevated, and I don't know what it is. I think it might be because of the rapidity with which they are baked, sold, and eaten. I think it's something about having them when they are so incredibly fresh. You never get a cold one. They're always really warm, like not burning your mouth warm because they cool them enough, but they are and so there's three places I can think of.
So that's turnover, basically, you're talking about there.
It is. And also, turnover and a really high-quality product. But it is. I'm gonna take you there, and we're going to queue. And we're going to then see if you think that €1 pastel is worth queuing for.
Yeah, I would like to do some kind of blind experiment, though. You don't have to be blinded, although that would be ideal. But,
Hang about. When you say I don't have to be blind, you mean I don't have to wear a blindfold or I don't actually have to have my eyes put out? I just want to be sure about
actually,
how
neither
how
of those is that you, as the person running the experiment, should also not know which one is which.
Okay.
That's double blind for you, just to be clear. I don't know.
Double blind was just out vile jelly twice. Like.
So that would be fun. I mean, we could have six of them. Just to be sure.
I mean, you can eat them in sixes.
I'm sure you can.
It's quite... There's a chocolate place in Lisbon, which I haven't been to in God, years.
And have you taken people you care about there?
No, because I literally have only been there the once, because it was so overwhelming that I couldn't quite cope. I bought a pastel de nata from them, and they had put melted chocolate in the middle.
Oh.
And that was a trip.
So, I like chocolate, you know that, but yeah, I find that hard to imagine in a pastel de nata.
I never went back, but I enjoyed every second of when I was there.
Have you ever made a pastel de nata?
Yes, I have. I've made them two or three times.
I assume it's just basically a short crust or a very short...
It's a flaky pastry.
Ah, a flaky pastry, and then it's just a custard of some kind with a bit of lemon.
It's a custard with a little bit of lemon. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cooked very high temperature, but not bread high. There's a baker's in Devon who make really very, very good sourdough. And very good, all sorts of other pastries. I will not touch their pastéis de nata with a pole.
They're too cooked.
Because they're too cooked. They cook them like they're cooking bread, and you can see them. It's like that. There's a difference between caramelized and cremated, and they're trying to use the wrong oven. Also, their custard's not great, nor is their pastry, which is unusual because everything else that they do is really, really good. But I think it might be because I'm doing that whole like, no, no.
Yeah. I think I have the idea that they should still be a little bit like brownies, should still be almost on the slightly undercooked side in the middle. You know,
a little bit of wobble, and you definitely want to struggle eating them if you have a mustache.
Exactly, which is one of the reasons I've avoided.
Oh yes, because you are famously hirsute.
I need to. Hirsute means hairy.
It does.
Yeah, thank you. Famously.
I just want to say that we are nearly 20 minutes in.
We haven't talked about anything.
All we've done is talked about pastries and bread. I haven't had breakfast. That might be why.
Oh, dear. So you did make me think, you know what? We could just keep talking about those things, though. You reminded me of something which is a bit political, though.
Okay.
It's not about Roman versus Neapolitan pizzas, which of course is profoundly political in this country.
I can well imagine.
Yeah, I don't think it's really a contest. I mean, I think Neapolitan pizza is. I'm not just stating a preference from my, but I think it is far more pervasive around the world.
Oh, absolutely. I think if I was to be given a crispy pizza, I'd be a little bit like, oh, I was hoping for poofy pillow piss. Oh,
exactly. Or that you've ended up at that pizza joint that Prince Andrew went to.
Oh, okay. Moving on.
I can't even remember the name of the pizza joint.
Pizza Express.
There you go.
That's famous for its dough balls and harbouring the friends of sex traffickers. Oh, poor Pizza Express. I'm so sorry. I'm sure you don't harbour sex predators. It's just unfortunate that you are a publicly available food chain restaurant where all sorts of people. I'm sure there are kind people who go there as well as monsters. Moving on.
Yeah, I feel like we might get. We might get thingamied by Pizza Express if we keep going along this direction.
Sponsored or sued.
sued is what I was thinking. But look, Pizza Express, if you want to sponsor us, I'll take all your dough balls.
That's what he said.
So yeah, it was... it's this... I got sent a colleague... not in the same department at work, a thing to sign. You know, what do you call it? A petition.
Yeah, a petition.
And it was about what's going on in Gaza.
Okay, I knew you were... carry on.
And it's actually, in a way, my feelings and thoughts about what's going on there, and I don't have many, and the reason I don't have many is because I don't really know. Like
because you're still on a news diet, aren't you?
Pretty much, but
you get things, yeah.
But even if I wasn't, understanding the complexities of Middle East politics, like really trying to understand what the hell's going on there, is like to me that's I can only barely scratch the surface as a non-expert. I mean, I can say I don't like innocent people being killed, and then who would disagree with that? And yeah, and so
it would appear the US government, the UK government, quite a lot of people are disagreeing with that at the minute. I am feeling very itchy about talking about this.
Okay, so we don't have to.
Oh no, carry on. I'm interested in what was the inciting event for you.
Well, it was just the thing about being asked by a colleague to sign a petition, and me not feeling like I have the understanding to sign it. The thing about being asked to do something by a colleague where my thought when I read it is, it's really interesting that they're talking about the killing of innocents, but no mention of the innocent Jews who were killed is made in this. And I find that, and that to me is wrong. It's wrong to imagine that there are some innocents who are not innocent, basically.
Yeah.
Is the implied thing. And I'm not talking about balance. I'm just talking about going, something else has happened here, and no mention of it is, there's a kind of, there's an act of violence in that as well. And so that's where I, it, you know, gets me hot under the collar. Some people's lives are okay. It's okay. Their lives to be lost, they're meaningless because they're the oppressors. So it's really, you know, as if those people, those kids at that concert, are somehow the oppressors. So it's really, I just find that, that's where, and so I have now finally come out and said it.
I woke up this morning and I switched on my Instagram because, you know.
Wow.
I'm Pavlovian. And there was a... There was a story waiting for me, and it was a Jewish man who had lost his two parents. He was my age. He'd lost his two parents in the first bombing. And he said that the missile was launched 50 meters from his home. And he started to explain the devastation that had happened to his parents' house, and obviously he couldn't continue that line, and I was watching it and just going, this is so uncomfortable, but it's a direct address to camera and he's talking to me and I feel I should listen to him. And he got
to the
end.
That's how you kicked off your Sunday morning.
That's how I kicked off my Sunday morning. And he got to the end of his direct address to camera. And I don't know if this was a news piece or if this was something that was just him uploading to Instagram. I'm not really sure. I mean, you're never really sure of the provenance of these things because they kind of get...
Which is always, you know, that's always one of the things that makes me slightly antsy about them.
Exactly, which is why I tend to only... reference the ones like for example from Forensic Architecture. I'm very happy to talk about what they've put on their Instagram feed because they're Forensic Architecture. The reason I know about them is one of their researchers, Kishan San, came to give a keynote to our PhD students a couple of weeks ago, and he was just fucking awesome, Simon.
Wow, fantastic.
I mean, he was just a really, first of all, he was a really nice guy who spent his keynote was scheduled at the end of a day full of PhD presentations, and he was just fully present in a way that many keynotes are not. And he drew
you mean most, right? Pretty much all. I've seen some shocking behavior by keynotes in the past. I really have.
Well, I can say Kishan San, he's not going to be listening to this, but if anybody ever meets him, lovely man. And he responded to all of the PhD presentations when he was talking, and also gave this hours long fascinating overview of the work of
the group
of Forensic Architecture, and it was just superb. I don't usually equivocate when I see a post from somebody, you know, something like an organization like that. It's like, oh, it's a research organization that I already know and I trust. This is just one of their channels of communicating their ideas, as well as through much more, academic forms. But this guy got to the end and he said, but the one thing that I need you to understand is that war is not the answer. My family does not want revenge. This cannot go on. We must find a way to live together in peace. And I just was struck by the clarity with which a man who had lost his parents to Hamas was able, in such short order, to be able to say, we can't do this.
It's also not a heterodox opinion either, is it?
No.
I mean, it's not a heterodox opinion in Palestine, and nor is it in Israel.
And as you say, it's complicated, and it, and I understand why a response to what I guess it's also, is it because you're being asked to do something that feels relatively performative?
Well, I mean, there's that. I think there's that part of it which I'm. Yes, there's that, but it's a small part of it. It's just that slight feeling of the assumption that my politics will be this way.
Okay.
That because I exist in the university and because I have particular thoughts about, I don't know, whatever, climate change or whatever, that somehow my politics will align in a way that, and so I don't, and I guess the reason I brought it up is because I don't know how to express the contrary thought, meaning I don't know how to say to this person, I really appreciate this, but I think I'm going to give it a, you know, as you said, you immediately said, well, there's no way you can do that without basically, and, you know, this is a colleague this is not someone again in my center, but who I really think is amazing. And I think is, you know, I really like working with them. And so, you know, it's a really, and maybe also I'm putting too much store in the idea that somehow that will become a problem. That just because I've expressed something contrary or counter to that somehow ruins a relationship.
Well, I think it comes back to this idea that we rarely talk to one another now. I think you and I have spent more time figuring things out between one another than I have with beyond Bob anybody else in the world.
The moral of the story is start a podcast with someone. Figure it out.
Well, I think maybe the moral of the story is recognize that people are multifaceted, multidimensional, and they say things, and even as they're saying things, they're misspeaking. I know that I have not captured the complexity of my thoughts about the complexity of the situation that we are trying not to talk about. Yes. I've already fallen foul because my mouth cannot frame what my brain struggles with already. So it's like, you know, the hardware is not up to the task of the software in this moment.
I mean, that's part, yeah. I know, it's also that the sort of the, you know, the kind of hotness of it as well. It's also partly not wanting to participate in something where so much of what's going on is uncertain or unknown. You know, and I know that I know people go, no, this is definitely certain. This has absolutely happened. And this has absolutely happened. I go, well, you know, so I'm a little bit, I just want to slow. My kind of desire generally is just to slow down enough before, so that we're not talking about something so hot and so heated and so, you know, but yeah. By the way, just as a little aside, if people, not last week's episode, but the week before, if you went, hey, this is the same as the week before, that's because I uploaded the wrong one. And you can delete that episode, so it's not last week's, but the week before, and download a different version of it, and it's about 2 minutes long, and it's a two-minute apology with some mentions of Nazis.
Oh, my God.
I don't think you've heard it, Lee, and nor do I think you ought to.
I haven't. That was in my period of travel chaos, which I should say my travel chaos has become more chaotic or less chaotic. As I have taken, you know, I said I was on research leave.
Yeah.
I've used some of that time to take a little bit of a break from the UK, and I am not located in England right now.
I'm assuming you're in Portugal.
I am. And so
the walls are all dry. And
oh, so dry. So dry. But this conversation comes, I've on the heels of sort of rehearsing it with friends here. I've been out for dinner twice. I've only been a couple of days.
You mean talking about night. This politics?
Talk about this politics.
Oh, I see. But,
again, I was doing that. Yeah. Well, I don't think I was very practiced as a result of talking about it. But can I say that where the conversations began, it's not ever where the conversations ended, because we did keep drinking cocktails of wine. And it turns out that by the end of the night, we were having much, much, much more free and open conversations about any old nonsense. It was. I've had some lovely times.
It's the ultimate privilege, isn't it? Being able to not talk about it.